Hey everybody, welcome back to Cocktails and Spirits. This is Alphonse, also known as Fonz. Today I am in New Orleans at Tales of the Cocktail and I have a great guest, Mike Petrick, spirits and cocktail writer and educator. How are you doing, Mike?
Hey Fonz, I'm doing well.
Good. Excited to talk to you, learn from you. I've checked out your website and it's super cool. I love tiki cocktails. So, I always want to dive as much as I can into that. Sometimes with rum and tiki, I feel like it's so complex. It's so hard to really understand it. But anytime I get a chance to, learn a little bit more of it, it's exciting. So I'd love first to hear how you got into this industry.
Yeah. So actually, I'll introduce myself very briefly. Again, my name is Matt Petrick. I'm a rum and spirits cocktail educator, historian, consultant, anything that will make me a little money. So I got into this as a home enthusiast circa 2010 or so. I was a software engineer for 30 years. I quit in 2018 because I loved it so much and I wanted to do it full time. So I came in as like a home enthusiast and, first fell in love with tiki cocktails, reading the Jeff Berry books, trying to make cocktails at home. And then at some point, I was like, what are these rums? Like, we don't have Demerara rum on our shelves here in Seattle. We don't have, a funky Jamaican rum. What are they? And so when we would travel, I'd go pick up those rums and bring them home. And if I'm, spent money on this thing, I want to know more about it. I start reading. And at the time, it was far less advanced than we are today with transparency and all these sort of things. So I was reading it, trying to read about it. It was like, I get little bits and pieces of information, but I needed more. So that sort of set me down this rabbit hole of trying to understand rum. And, I had a former science background. My college degree was in physics. Yeah. So I'm always like, there's an answer out there. There has to be an answer. And so I just started digging and digging. And at some point, rum sort of took over my life.
And for example, what was that kind of rum that really caught your attention, or that when you did research, that's what, opened up wanting to learn more about specific rums? Or just, I guess in a way, which rum was it that you remember? And also, where did you even begin? Because as I mentioned, rum is so complex. Did you go to a specific region or did you pick a specific brand?
So, I would say early on, it was, Jamaican rum. Jamaican rum is sort of the core of many tiki recipes. Yeah. And in fact, in our minimalist tiki book, we do the little statistical analysis of the old recipes, and Jamaican rum is by far the most common. And it's also, Jamaican rum is pretty unique. Like, you taste it and you're like, you're drinking something unusual. And so, and we didn't have anywhere near the amount of different Jamaican rums 10, 12 years ago that we do now. But there was something, I think it may have been Smith and Cross was an early one, and there were some other ones. And it was just like, something in my brain. I'm like, what the hell is this? This is suddenly like, okay, this is not, I thought I understood what rum is, but this is completely different. My brain is like, this is amazing. This is what rum is. This is what makes rum unique. And at some point you're like, is this safe to drink? Cause it's just weird enough. You're like, I don't even know. I'm like, should I be drinking this? No, I'm going to drink it because I love it. So Jamaican rum was sort of like my gateway into it. And it also, it has all the sort of lore around it, like Dunder and dead goat heads and all this kind of stuff. There were all the, you'd read what was available and very sometimes conflicting and sometimes mythical. And you're like, there's got to be more to it than that. And I've spent the past 10 or 15 years just sort of figuring all that out. And then as I learned more, explaining it to people, like, okay, here's how it really is.
And now you visited a couple of those distilleries and got to see the culture of what it is down there. And I imagine that's pretty awesome to see it in person.
I was very fortunate in 2016, an organization I now currently work with called WRSPA, West Indies Rum and Spirits Producers Association. They at the time were basically taking essentially like influencers, writers down to the Caribbean to see different distilleries. And I happened to luck out on the trip that went to Jamaica. And we actually got into 5 of the 6 Jamaican rum distilleries.
Damn,
and there's one I still have not been to. And
so there's
really
only 6 down in Jamaica?
There's only 6 in Jamaica, 6 operating in Jamaica. And but yeah, we got into all five of them. One of them wasn't even operating at the time. Now it's operating Long Pond. But that was, you know, I went not knowing very much about Jamaican rum, came home knowing a whole lot more, but also knowing
more questions.
I still have far more questions. And, you know, to this day, I'm still learning more and more esoteric stuff about not only the history of Jamaican rum and why these techniques came about. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate now that I can call some of the people who make it today. I call them my friends and I can occasionally buck them about, tell me more about this.
Now that was, you said about 10, 15 years ago.
So yeah, 10 or 15 years ago is when I started getting into it.
Yeah.
But the truly hardcore nerdy stuff is, you know, 8, 9 years ago. I'm starting about 8 or 9 years ago.
So then throughout those first couple of years, you were doing all the research and learning, and now you've, written a couple of books.
Right.
And now you're, you know, a lot of people go to you for, you know, to learn the way you used to go find, you know, people to learn from. Now they're coming into you and learning. So how did that, when did you realize, like, you know, I can do this and I can, you know, put what I'm learning into books and maybe I imagine seminars or stuff like that.
Right. So I mentioned previously in my past life as a software engineer. And as part of that, at some point I learned my skill is taking very complicated topics and breaking them down and explaining them to where most people can understand them. And I had done that for Microsoft Windows, like how it works. Cool. And so I'd written a couple of books about it. I was used to sort of like, okay, everybody, we're just gonna put pencils down and we're gonna understand actually how this all works. So I had experience with that, but never in spirits. So it was, you know, around 2013, my wife, Carrie, who's the co-author of both of our books, she said to me, like, I love you, but you need to tell other people this. You can't just keep telling me everything. You need to tell other people. Yeah. So that's when I first started my blog, which is Cocktail Wonk. It's still, I still post on it sometimes today. So that was 2013. But by 2016, it was actually after I came back from Jamaica, and I had been to some of the Barbados distilleries, some Jamaican distilleries, and a few others. And I thought, like, oh, I know enough to write a book about rum. I can do sort of for rum what I had previously done with Microsoft Windows. It's sort of like, okay, let's take a consistent approach to it. I think a fact-based approach. It's not a sort of like, let's talk about tasting notes or anything like that. Let's actually understand this all. And I thought in 2016, I made an outline and I thought, like, I know enough information to write this book. And I was very, very, very wrong. It took me 6 years to write that book. And in the intervening years, I learned at least 10 times more about rum than I did when I thought I knew enough to write a rum book.
Yeah. Well, and then tell us a little bit about that first book. when gathering all that information, you said it took so long. When was it finally that it felt like it was complete enough to publish?
Okay. So actually our first book was Minimalist Tiki.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you briefly. We kind of wrote Minimalist Tiki as a proof of concept that, like, can we write and publish a book ourselves? And the answer is yes. So once we knew that, then we said, like, okay, now we could proceed with the rum book. My goal all along was to write the rum book. You know, in 2016, the rum book, 2016, I had the outline. I knew the topics I wanted to cover. We chopped it around for an agent. Nobody was picking it up. Nobody's like, no, there are already rum books out there. And I'm like, not this rum book. So in 2018, when my wife and I finally decided, you know, if we don't do something now, we're never going to do it. We quit our jobs. That's when I sort of started in earnest trying and like starting, okay, I'm just going to start writing these chapters.
Yeah.
And even there, though, the more I learned, the more I'm like, okay, I would add a new chapter about something. And it was sort of like the more I started scratching, the more I learned. So I don't really feel like I understood everything that I wanted to say until 2020 or so. So by 2020, you know, basically as COVID started, as 2020, it's like I felt like, you know, I have all the basics down, and now it's a matter of grinding out a ton of like chapter by chapter, verifying everything. And so, and it actually went to print in the summer of 2022. So,
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's still even a it's fairly new. For, and then you do have, of course, the your new book, Modern Caribbean Rum, which was named the top four finalist for Tales of the Cocktail Foundation Spirited Awards for 2023 for Best New Book on Drink Culture, History, or Spirits.
Right.
So congratulations on, on that. Thank you. That's
fingers crossed for tomorrow. So.
Yeah, that's Friday, no?
It's Friday. It's Friday, Thursday. Yeah. Thursday, yeah.
That's exciting. And you know, tell us a little bit about that book. I got to see it. It is thick. It's a nice thick book. I've only read a couple pages, so but I definitely plan on adding that to my book collection at home.
Yeah, it is a beast of a book. Yeah. And we didn't set out to make it this big, but one of the benefits of being a publisher of publishing our own works is that we can let the books be what they need to be. Mm-hmm. There's no like we got to cram it into 300 pages and got to cut corners somewhere. So I had a very good idea of what I wanted to cover and like what the boundaries were of like what countries I wasn't going to include, which I would. But I think of the book, it's essentially a book in four parts. The first part is about just the introduction to rum and the history of, you know, a little bit of a history of rum. It's not a history book fundamentally, but it's important that we covered the history enough to add some context to it. So first part of the book is sort of background on like styles of rum, misconceptions about rum, history, things like that. Defining. The second part is about actual rum making. Many books on a spirit will give you like one chapter, like how tequila is made, for example. And in one chapter, they'll tell you about source material, fermentation, distillation, aging. And I'm like, that's not good enough for me.
Yeah.
So I have six chapters on one on source material, one on fermentation, one on distillation, and so forth. So that's the second part. The third part is the business of rum. And that's the thing most books never bother.
Yeah.
They don't talk about the brands. They don't talk about like the types of brands that are out there. So like in rum, there are some brands are original producer. Appleton Estate is made at Appleton Estate and owned by Appleton Estate, whereas a rum like say Pusser's is made by a different company. They buy the rum and they sell it as Pusser's rum. We call them
the source.
I forget the term I used. But and there are some brands like independent bottlers who aren't like a steady ongoing brand selling the same thing over and over, but they're like, oh, this is, you know, a 2005 Long Pond distillery mark at Cask Strength. So there's the different types of brands out there, and people don't really understand that. And likewise, you know, there's rum traders, the ones who like buy rum from all the distilleries for resale. Yeah. And you have to kind of understand that to sort of have an idea. If somebody hands you a bottle of rum, hands me a bottle of rum, I can look at it and tell you like, okay, this is an original producer or they're buying from this company. You kind of, you understand much more about the rum. And topics like free trade and protectionism, that, you know, there's a reason that certain brands are very inexpensive in the United States because they're essentially subsidized by the U.S. Tax system, if you will. And that's part three. And then the last part, the largest part of the book, which could easily be a book on its own, is 20 Caribbean countries or regions. We go through each one, you know, each country gets a chapter, and each chapter has as best as possible information about each distillery. So, for example, in the Jamaica chapter, six distilleries, there are six subsections, one per distillery, pictures from the distillery, details about the distillery, as much as possible, all aspects of their production process. So you could say, how does Appleton do things differently than say Worthy Park? You read those subsections, you actually can understand those differences. So it's truly, I think it's the Rum Geek's Bible. Like any bottle like on the shelf, you can pick it up, figure out where it's made and go read about that.
That sounds awesome. I can imagine the extensive research that you had to, you know, to get it done or for it. Now, what I'm really curious on is what made you choose the Caribbean style rums? With so many rums out there, what attracted you to the Caribbean rums to do it for?
Great question. We like to say that the Caribbean is the birthplace of rum, and it's still where most of the world's rum is made. And you know, when we think about the great rum brands, you know, Appleton or Mount Gay or St. James, for example, they're all Caribbean. And it's not to say that there aren't great rums being made like in America or Australia or someplace else, but the you know, by choosing the Caribbean, not only was I focusing on where rum was born, but also it served a useful purpose of defining my scope. If I had to say, I'm just going to cover every rum making country in the world, I'd still be writing it. And so by choosing Caribbean, I got to say what people consider to be the heart of rum. And they made it clear. I love American rums. I love Australian rums. I love rums Southeast Asia, but I just can't, you know, in this book, I can't attempt to cover them at the same level of care and depth.
And also one thing that is probably, I mean, as someone that really enjoys rum, but doesn't know so much about it the way, like, you know, a real rum enthusiast might not know it. The differences between every island in the Caribbean, it's like astonishing how different they are.
Yes.
And I really want to check out those sections because the way you say how you go through every island or country, the way it's made, I feel like that information is hard to just find it online sometimes. So the fact that it's all in one book, that sounds like you said, a rum Bible.
And I think that's an important part of it that I think people don't immediately understand is that you can find bits and pieces online. You can say like, oh, I want to know about Martinique rum, and you can go find a bunch of articles, but each one of them has their own perspective, which is great. But also if you're like, okay, now I want to compare Martinique rum to say Jamaican rum. Well, the person who wrote that Jamaican rum article doesn't necessarily have the same approach to it. And so it's really hard to do an apples to apples comparison if you're just getting bits and pieces from everything. So the book is unambiguously my style, my approach, for better or worse, but at least it's consistent that when we're looking at Martinique rum and when we're looking at Jamaican rum, when we're looking at St. Lucian rum, for example, the approach is the same. The same information is provided and in the same level of detail. And I think if you want a reference, if you want something to be a reference or something, you want it to be consistent. And so I had to do them all.
That's exactly that's like a great point. Like if you look up an article, they're going to be presented in the author's way of expressing themselves. And also that author might never have done a article for another island, or they might not know what that style is. Now would you say this book is for is it suitable for someone getting into rum, or will it maybe be too much coming in, or does the first section of the book kind of like allow you to get ready towards the end of the book?
So I would say it depends what your initial level of interest is. If you're like, oh, I've had rum for the first time and I'm really excited about it, it might be fine for that. It spares no amount of effort to provide as much information as possible, but I also wrote it to be accessible. I assumed that the readers wanted to know. Yeah, I assume my readers are smart and that I can give them the tiniest, like, for example, the tiniest little bit of chemistry, enough to understand that some of the flavors in rum we experience in our everyday lives, like vinegar. Vinegar is a particular type of acid, and these same acids exist in rums or in the wash that makes these rums. So I assume we can give them a little bit of information. But I don't expect you to be a scientist or a historian to read this. So I sought to make everything very approachable. And I feel like some people have said, like, it's just so overwhelming that I don't know where to start. Yeah. But then the people who have started have been like, it's really readable. That makes me happy, is that, I'd like to think at any point you can jump in and start reading a chapter and you go like, oh, this is not so bad. It's not super geeky. It's not overwhelming. I'm not left behind because I'm not already a rum expert.
And I feel like a lot of what I like about cocktail books, because I'm not I'll be honest, I've never been much of a reader, and the only books I read now are just cocktail or, you know, about, you know, spirits, because that's what grabs my attention. I feel like a lot of the cool things about those style of books is you can kind of just hop on here and there, mm-hmm. or go read a certain chapter if you right. have a question on something. It's not like reading, for example, like a novel where you got to right. go page by page.
Right.
So I imagine it's a similar style.
I mean, I've tried as much as possible. I like to be each chapter to be standalone. Like mm-hmm. you can just jump in. However, I mean, the challenge I faced as well is, for example, if we're going to talk about the fermentation mm-hmm. of, say, St. Lucia, every country, each of those 20 chapters is going to have, you know, and each of those distilleries, 75 distilleries, they're each going to have a little, talk a little bit about the fermentation, a little bit yeah. about their distillation. And so I'm not going to reintroduce fermentation every single time. Yeah. And yeah. so, you know, I have a chapter where I said, okay, you know, in the front, I say, you should try to read these first few chapters mm-hmm. just so you have the baseline understanding. Yeah. So we're going to talk about all the parts of fermentation, all the parts of distillation. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the later chapters, we're not going to like start this, we're not going to reintroduce it every single mm-hmm. time the way you might in an article. You're doing a standalone article and you read the magazine, like, yeah, you got a sentence or two to explain something. It doesn't work when you're covering that 75 times in a row. So
no, that makes a ton of sense. While writing the book, what's one of the things, and it's probably a very hard question mm-hmm. to on one of the chapters or one of the, because I know you mentioned the distilleries you visited in there, what's one of the one that stands out as when you were writing it that you just kind of remember that time that you were there, that it was one of your favorite times?
Oh, so many. I have to think.
Could be with the distillery being unique, or you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would say one of my sort of favorite, I don't say moment, but like trips, if you will, was to Grenada, and Grenada's not certainly not the most famous rum producing island, mm-hmm. but there's a spot on the northeast corner of the island where there's two distilleries, mm-hmm. and one, River Antoine, represents the most OG rum distillery really? You can imagine, and that there's really nothing they're doing there that they couldn't have been doing in like 200 years ago. Really? And it is very old school. They're literally milling the cane on site with a water wheel.
Yeah.
They burn local firewood to heat distills. It's incredibly not a modern distillery, to the point like their, I note in the book, their bottle filling line is an igloo cooler. They literally put it in an igloo cooler and fill a bottle. And like 2 miles away is Renegade, is the most modern, mm-hmm. highly efficient, scientifically controlled, terroir focused distillery making cane juice rums from single harvest in a single cane field. Like essentially zero pollution, yeah. using the bagasse that they from the cane to power to make the steam to mill, still highly efficient. But I love that because, you know, within 2 miles of each other, we have rum's most distant past and rum's, you know, yeah. advanced future.
That sounds awesome. Like just tradition in itself in that specific distillery. Now, is there a reason why they might not want to modernize, or is it they're used to it the way they're doing it, or that's kind of like a part of their history that they want to stick with?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I think, you know, they kind of are like a living museum.
Yeah.
Why they, you know, I'm speculating, but I don't think there was ever a whole lot of money to be made from their rum. So like they had a business that served the local island. The stuff was never really exported. It wasn't like Bacardi where like we want to ship our rums around the world. It was just like, hey, it's a small family business and we make this stuff for the island, well, the island population. Mm-hmm. But it's funny in that their rum is kind of weird. It's a mm-hmm. sort of higher ester, unusual flavors. But it's funny, in the last 10 or 15 years, sort of the outside world has discovered that rum and they're like, we want this. So what was a, like a $9 bottle of rum on Grenada is like, hey, this is just what the locals drink, is now being sold as this highly prized thing in like the New York City liquor stores for $85 a bottle. So it's just, it is sort of that little capsule in time. And we certainly don't want to like throw that away and modernize it. But yeah, it's a good question.
Now, as rum, there's a lot more people teaching about rum, and do you feel like rum is about to hit a movement where, you know, it becomes a spirit, kind of like what tequila has done and bourbon has had its moment right now. Tequila and mezcal are completely going up the spirits list. Do you think we're close to that in rum? Do you think rum can get to that point?
So, I mean, it's a good question. It's sort of like for the last 15 years, it's been, this is the year of rum.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing, though, is since the rise of the internet and since the rise of social media, you know, Facebook groups and things like that, we're starting to sort of finally get that point where rum is slowly starting to get that respect. And I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges it has is, if you think about it, bourbon is a single country spirit. Mm-hmm. Scotch whiskey is a single country spirit, and Irish whiskey is a single country spirit. Mm-hmm. And we treat them as distinct spirits.
Yeah.
You know, in a cocktail recipe, we might say, oh, a bourbon. And we don't think oh, we can substitute a Scotch whiskey easily. Or we shouldn't substitute. But in reality, those are all three of those, you know, bourbon, Scotch whiskey, Irish whiskey are all subcategories of whiskey. Yeah. And we need people to understand that it's the same idea with rum, that rum is a meta category. It's like whiskey, that that Jamaican rum is a distinct spirit. We don't have any problem saying that, you know, Scotch whiskey is a distinct spirit. We should understand Jamaican rum is a distinct spirit, very distinct from Martinique rum agricole, very distinct from Cuban rum. And I think that's sort of the problem rum has had with people, is that they think like, oh, it's just rum. Makes sense. Go like, well, rum has no rules. And it's just so wildly different. It tastes, it's like, because you don't understand. You're treating it like a single country spirit, and it's not. It's really a family of different spirits. And that's a lot of my education, is trying to get people to understand that.
No, I mean, that's a great way to put it, because I had never thought about it that way. Like, you could have someone that says, yeah, I enjoy rum, and the rum they had was maybe a Bacardi Mojito. Right? And then the next rum, you like rum. Okay, I'm going to make you a mojito with Jamaican rum.
Yeah, rum and fire or something.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like, no, I don't like rum anymore.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. And I feel like that's a good way to approach it, going by country and accepting that there's just a subcategory of rum.
Yeah. And it's this popular saying like, well, rum has no rules.
I've heard
and
that.
So there's literally a chapter in the book, an entire chapter where I'm like, no, rum is actually has the most rules of any category there are for each of the, there's at least 12 different geographical indications, the same way that, you know, that tequila has its, you know, the CRT and its regulations around it, that Jamaica has its own regulations, and Cuba has its own regulations, and Guyana has its own regulations, and just people aren't aware of them. And so there's a lot of education there until we can get people like understand like this is just as good, that just because the different types of rum you might find are different doesn't mean they're not just as good and just as historic and artisanal as your Scotch whiskeys or cognacs or what have you.
And then just out of curiosity, in the book, do you cover like each country set of laws, specific ones?
Yeah. So it's one chapter that, and I even have a nice little table in there where I talk about like, you know, the one, you know, like the rows are per country, and then the columns are like, what are the rules called? What are the rules regarding source material? What are the rules regarding fermentation? What are the rules regarding distillation? What are the rules regarding aging requirements? What are the rules regarding what you can call the rum?
Like, I was going to say, because there's even, we've talked to Arminder on Instagram. He's Rum Revival.
Yeah.
And he was telling us that if you blend, I think I might be quoting him wrong, but you got to put the age amount of the least, I mean.
Yeah, minimum age statement.
Minimum age statement.
And most Caribbean countries, if they have regulations, most of them will specify, will say like it has to be a minimum age statement. Mm-hmm. There's actually a few countries that allow an average age statement. And people are like, oh, well, that means they could cheat. They could put one drop of an old rum. Like, no, it's not. It doesn't work like that. There's actually is a formula for if you're going to use an average age statement, there's a formula, and that formula actually makes sense. So and it could actually give you a better sense of what a rum's typical age is. So if I made a blend that was like 90% 20-year aged rum, but it included like 10% 5-year aged rum, with a minimum age statement, I can only say 5 years. Yeah. But if I say average age statement, that would say like, okay, well, the average age is 18 years. And some people are very adamant, like minimum age is the only way to go.
Yeah.
But there are some cases.
So it seems unfair if you're using, for example, like that much.
Yeah. So if you, it's kind of, you can think of it in some cases as unfair to the blender of like, maybe they can make a better blend if they just put a little bit of, of a younger rum in there. Mm-hmm. But then, the marketing people were like, oh no, then you're, we can't call it a, now we have to call it a 5-year rum or whatever. So, it's a controversial topic, but
yeah,
I said in the book, I cover this. I've tried to cover everything. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. And now as we, getting close to wrapping up, what's your, I mean, you obviously have learned to enjoy rum in multiple ways. I'm sure neat, rocks, cocktail. What are some of those, like, your go-to way to enjoying it now after years of experience? Do you still kind of have a mix of both cocktails? Still into the tiki cocktails? Or just kind of like neat, sipping neat now?
So I do, I try to incorporate rum throughout my day. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm working, and especially like maybe I'm writing about Cuban rum at the particular moment, I will, grab a nice bottle of, 12-year age Cuban rum and pour a little bit in my glass and enjoy it while I'm working. And then, at night, I'm going to be like, I would say more nights than not, I'm making a tiki cocktail, sort of tiki cocktail, because we love them. Our first book was tiki cocktails. Yeah. So it's like my first love when it comes to cocktails. I love all the cocktails, but the tiki ones are my first love. And so
it's one of your favorite tiki cocktails.
Oh, Lord. sort of like, what is your favorite children? I would say I'd particularly, love like the properly made Mai Tai, I'm thinking of Jet Pilots, things like that. Spicy and where the rum actually plays a part in the flavor profile. There's a lot of recipes, a fairly light rum's used, and those were like made. I think the originals were made. The originals that use the light rum were made because maybe they figured like there are customers who maybe don't like that rum flavor. So I like the ones like the big bold flavors. Yeah. Like there's a Jamaican rum in the Mai Tai for a reason. You should taste that. You should be able to taste that Jamaican rum in that. Or same thing with the Demerara rum. So
I still have not tried a Demerara rum.
You should.
Earlier today I was down at the Flor de Caña booth, and I got to try one of the cocktails they had and got to read a little bit what they're doing about sustainability.
Right.
I know they have a challenge for bartenders as well. So I might have to get that info because the cocktail was delicious, and Flor de Caña puts out amazing rum, and they wouldn't have been part of the, because they're in Nicaragua, right?
So they're actually in the book. Nicaragua's in the book, and my sort of definition of Caribbean is not just Caribbean islands. The loose definition is the country where the rum is made, is it touched by the Caribbean Sea?
Oh, cool.
So, naturally the islands will be, but also anything in like Central America, South America. So, for example, Nicaragua, Panama, Venezuela, they have ocean on their beaches are on the Caribbean Sea. And likewise, for example, Guyana, not technically in the Caribbean, it's actually part of South America, but Guyana identifies as a Caribbean. They're part of like the international organizations for Caribbean countries. Yeah, so they're in there. And also like, how could you do a book who would not include Guyana? It's such an iconic rum making region.
Nice. That's awesome. That's good. to know that definition for the book. That's Caribbean Seas. And then I'm going to ask you one last question regarding Mexican Room. Because I'm Mexican, and I love to hear about Mexico. A ton of good spirits are coming out, and there's I know they have there's some rum coming out. There's charanda down there. What are your thoughts on
those? So I quite like it. I think it's polarizing to some people. I don't have the actual statistics, but the Mexican rums that sort of have name and mind share within the enthusiast community and the bartender community tend to be cane juice rums. Mm-hmm. But they're very different from like the Martinique AOC agricoles. They tend to be, I would say they're sort of like, the best I could describe it almost is a cross between, you know, super clean cane juice rums and like Jamaican rums. It's like, they're not the same funky as Jamaican, but they oftentimes will use sort of like wild yeast, longer fermentations. Like they have their own unique characteristic. Mm-hmm. They're like an older style of rum before, you know, by the, you know, 1920s, 30s, 40s, and, you know, rum became sort of standardized in places like Puerto Rico, or like, okay, how much rum can we make? Like, let's optimize everything and do everything precisely and repeatable. So, you know, Bacardi, very repeatable. It's the same over and over and over again. Whereas in the old, you know, 200 years prior, it was like, you know, whatever yeast were in the day, that day was fermented. Yeah. And I think, you know, sort of still some of that sense of wildness there, you know, in the same way that, you know, some of like the, I think like Mezcal, Vago, and the Del Maguey, like the single village stuff or whatever, like each village technically kind of make the same thing, but very different characteristics. And I think you see that in the Mexican rums. And Mexico actually has a long history with cane spirits. It's just that most people don't know about it.
Yeah.
You know, sort of the agave sort of
overshadowed a little bit by the big overshadowed spirits.
By the agave. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I dig the stuff. I have a pretty decent collection of Mexican rums. Yeah. I'm sure there's a few I don't have.
Yeah.
I did include Mexico in the book just because it was one more thing that I wouldn't be able to do properly and still get this book published.
That's awesome, man. Well, I love, learning. I can't wait to, pick up a copy and fully dive into it. It sounds amazing. It sounds like you said, the Rum Bible. And do you want to let us know where, is it available fully online? Most big retailers?
Yeah. So, because we publish it, we also distribute ourselves. So, with a few rare exceptions, usually most people just buy it directly from us. Mm-hmm. So our website is wonkpress.com. So WONK, wonkpress.com. It's on there on the front page. If you don't remember that, you can also just go to moderncaribbeanrum.com. It's literally all three words, moderncaribbeanrum.com. And it'll take you some more information about the book, but then you can certainly link to where you'd buy it.
Cool. Awesome. Well, congrats on, you know, the nominee with Tales of the Cocktail Spirited Awards. Best of luck on Friday. Hopefully you guys win it.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Fingers crossed.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for your time, and then we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you for having me.